Welcome to Shedding Light Hunting Stories Podcast, the podcast dedicated to the average Joe and their great hunting stories. I'm your host, Travis Williams. You're listening to episode 169. Well, hey guys, welcome to the show. Hope that you are having a fantastic week wherever you are. I know hunting seasons are coming in for a lot of states, a lot of different species, and whitetail just came in here in Ohio last weekend, and I got to tell you, the opener was absolutely awesome for me. So I got up that morning and went with my wife over to my kid's soccer game, and then from the soccer game, we went to like a farmer's market. And we just enjoyed the day together. I did not hunt. Coming back from a 10-day elk trip, I have learned a few things over the years. And one of those things is if you do that, you leave your wife with the kids for 10 days, and the opener comes in that weekend for another animal, you probably ought to just spend it with your family. And so that's what I did. My very first deer hunt is actually tomorrow. So I've waited a week. We got a cold front here in Ohio, and so tomorrow, being September 29th, is going to be my first time. Got everything kind of lined up and ready, got myself up in the saddle there for the first time, and I'm just kind of going in blind to an area. It's an area where I've seen deer move a lot last year. In fact, it's where I shot my last doe last year, and good spot. Saw some bucks there. There's a loaded oak tree on top of the hill, and so there's a flat below that where I just saw some deer moving, not all of them. But the way the wind's blowing, it just kind of is, it might be more of an observation sit, just kind of sneak in. I like where the wind's going to be, and I've got to climb up and just enjoy the evening. That's my game plan. Colder, you know, usually I don't expect a whole lot in late September, but you just never know when it's colder weather. So looking forward to that. My brother's been sending me some pictures of a real nice buck, kind of daylighting that he's got. Travis Shire's had a nice buck daylighting, so you just never know whenever that cold front hits, and it's just excitement in the air as another deer season approaches. I tell you guys, I really appreciate whenever you leave a review, whenever you leave a rating, whenever you go over and leave a comment on any of our videos on Shedding Light Outdoors on YouTube. Greatly appreciate that. Today's guest found this podcast just by searching on Apple and was listening to our elk trip and listened to another episode, and he is from Saskatchewan, and he wanted to come on the show, and he has some awesome stories. Really love talking to Tanner Pulaski tonight. We had just a great conversation, hit all kinds of things in Saskatchewan, from him shooting an elk, bull elk with a longbow. We talk about that story. We talk about mule deer. We talk about spear fishing, a little bit of everything, and just some little nuggets throughout, some tips, things that we've learned. I think it's a really good one that you guys are going to enjoy this. I do want to, speaking of videos and things like that, I do want to let you guys know that I am currently working on my 2022 Montana elk trip video, just kind of a recap. If you're interested in that, if you want to watch it, if you listen to the last podcast, you know that there's not like that grand finale that you're hoping for, but still some really, I just think, some pretty cool footage. I've had a great time editing it, and here probably within the next week, I'll let you guys know it should come out. Want to get that out there for you guys to check out. So, guys, I want to thank you so much. We're ready to jump in. Here is Tanner from Saskatchewan. All right, guys. Well, joining me from Saskatchewan, Canada, is Tanner Pulaski. Tanner, how's it going, man?
Pretty good, Travis. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
Man, I'm pumped to have you on, and I'm even more pumped that we practiced your name, your last name there, and I think I nailed it on that last
You nailed drive. It, yeah.
Yes, good. How's things going, man?
Pretty good. Just got done work, had some supper, and having a nice relaxing time on the computer.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for joining me to tell some hunting stories. What do you do for a living?
Pest control out here in Saskatchewan. So killing rats and mice and all those unwanted pests for people, yeah.
Yeah, we had to call somebody the other day. We had hornets. My wife, I went to do a honey-do list before my trip to Montana, and my wife wanted me, I was like, I'm going to go wash those windows. And what, you know what, I'm up there on the ladder, and I get down, and I'm walking, and one of these giant European hornets come out and stings me unprovoked. And fun stuff.
Not the greatest, yeah. It can get pretty messy some days, yeah, that's for sure, yeah.
Well, cool, man. Well, I'm pumped to have you on the show. Tell us a little bit about yourself, what it's like for you there in Saskatchewan, and just I want to kind of get into your hunting background, too. I'm very interested in that.
Okay, so where I'm from, it's kind of right on the forest fringe here, because there's a lot of prairies in Saskatchewan, and it kind of moves into the boreal. I guess I'm not sure if you call it the boreal, but it's just pure bush okay. to the north of me and pure farmland to the south, basically.
Okay.
So I'm kind of right on the edge, which is kind of prime territory for elk, so to speak, and yeah. all those other animals. So, but yeah, my upbringing, my dad hunted a lot, my grandpa hunted a lot, and dad always hunted with the longbow when he was younger, and he hunted with the compound and rifle and all those goodies. So he yeah. brought us up since we started hunting since we were born. So
what did you hunt like at an early, so me not knowing much about Canada hunting, I'm learning because we had a guy on a few weeks ago. For us, it's like usually like squirrels and rabbits, and then you start with a small game. Is it same in Canada, or what did you cut your teeth on?
Yeah, squirrels was a big one. Yeah, just practicing shooting squirrels, and snaring rabbits was a big one. Dad liked taking us snaring rabbits. So, I guess when we were legal age to hunt, bears was the first thing that we started to hunt. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
In a tree stand. So it's kind of a little nervous when you're 12 years old, shaking in the stand, and the bears are at the bottom of your tree, but you get used to it pretty quick.
Yeah. My encounter with a bear there a couple weeks ago in Montana was enough for me. All I saw was its back, and I was just like, yeah, I'm out of here. I'm done. Yeah. I'm done with it. I don't know what kind it is, and I don't want to find out. So
yeah, you got more grizzly bears in the mountains there. So it's, you kind of got to be cautious. Black bears aren't so bad. They're pretty tame. So
yeah. Oh, that's cool, man. So you grow up kind of with that small game, and then moving into bears, which is interesting. Now, did you start with the longbow and stick with that, or did you go, you know, try the compound for a while? What's your archery story there?
I first started with the compound. I don't think I was quite strong enough at the start. I really wanted to start with the longbow because dad was using the longbow, and it kind of looked fun. But I mean, when you're 12 years old, and I'm pretty skinny at 12, so it was hard for me to pull her back. So yeah, I started with the compound, 40 pound draw weight. That's the legal limit in Saskatchewan here. So
same.
I started with there, and kind of did that for about quite a few years. I used the compound, I guess, and hunted deer and elk and bears and all that stuff with dad, and until I was strong enough, then I wanted to make the switch.
Yeah,
for sure. But
that's cool, man. Now so whenever you reached out, I started kind of doing a little Google search or looking through your profile, and it led me to a page that you guys have. And then it also led me to a hunt that I definitely think people will want to hear about. And that is an elk hunt that you had back in earlier this month, right?
Yeah. Early this month. Yeah.
So usually I save like that story for the end, but I think that'd be a great place. Let's just start with the most recent action. We'll work our way backwards and hear some other stories, but tell us about this elk trip, what led up to it. And, okay. And then I'm definitely later on, I'm going to point people to the video.
Okay. So we're, sorry. Yeah. The elk trip here. We like to in Saskatchewan, it's a little different, like I said, than the mountains. So it's not like hills and stuff where I'm from. There's just little bluffs kind of here and there around where we live. Mm-hmm. Not like nothing huge. Like you can't walk for like 4 kilometers at a time. Like the bluffs here are only about a kilometer wide, kind of like kilometer square bushes, like pretty tiny, like some elk bushes that we shot elk in are maybe 300 yards by 300 yards big, like something wow. like that. It's they're extremely tiny. So every year we kind of have our spots that we hit, so to speak. And we kind of know like the elk will be in this bush or this bush or this bush. It's kind of a gamble. They kind of jump between all the bushes, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And if you just keep hunting those bushes, eventually you're going to stumble into them when they're going to be bedded in there the day you want to hunt.
Now, when you say bush, do you mean like looking at the video, whenever you say boreal, would that be considered like bush, or is it just, it just looked real thick, like a lot of shrubs, yeah. a lot of thick pines, low ground, you know, low to the ground shrubs too.
Yeah.
How they're to describe all that?
They're all kind of different. It's hard to say. Sometimes the elk like the little, like the willow kind of sloughs, I guess they're called. And they got they got kind of short red willows in them in the middle, and it's like, it's a good bedding ground for them, grass, and they can hear stuff coming in from the outside, sort of thing. Some sloughs are guarded with big spruce and pines and all that, and the middle is just willows where they bed, and other times there's a creek through the middle. So it's all kind of different. Some are mossy bottom and nice quiet walking, and it's just kind of, it's all different sort of thing, which makes it interesting.
Oh, cool. Okay.
But the particular bush that we were hunting, I hunted it I hunted it the day before, just one day earlier. And I went in there and I did my setups and stuff, and the elk just weren't in the bush. They, for some reason, they decided to sleep in another bush that day. So went through and I was just kind of confused. I was like, they should be in here. There was fresh tracks, beds, like cattle paths with elk and stuff. And I was just like, why the heck weren't they in here, sort of thing. And so I went through it, and then I was talking to Tyler because he went with me the second day. I was like, you got to come with me here. Like, it'd be stupid for us not to hunt this bush every single day because there was so much sign in there.
Yeah,
I was like, we just got to be persistent and just keep hunting this bush, you know. And like, they're going to be in here one of these mornings, they're going to be in here. And that morning, of course, they were. And so we went there in the dark, and we like to sneak in this bush here. I think it deters other hunters from getting in because the edge of the bush that we go in is just thick. Like, it's, you have to be moving the brush out of your way to get into this bush. The yeah. inside's absolutely beautiful, but the outside first, 100 yards or 50 yards is just absolute. There's rabbits running around with no hair on them. That's how thick the outside is. So it's a little bit of a swim to get in there, but we get there in the dark and we try to get through as quiet as we can into the bush this morning. And the wind was absolutely perfect for us. Like to start downwind, right? We got our bush we hunt, and we go, okay, we'll start on this side. It's got the wind in our nose, and there's no thermals and stuff in Saskatchewan. She's just a straight wind always. Yeah.
That's nice. That's a nice thing to have.
Yeah. So it makes it pretty easy for a guy. So we head in, and what we like to do is once you bust them, you're done. Like, your hunt's over. Cause like I said, they're a small bush. As soon as you bust the herd, and there's 10, 20 elk in the middle of these bushes, usually you're done. Like, they know you're there, the gig's up, sort of thing. So, so what we like to do, we like to go in once we get through that thick edge, we like to set up our tree stands. Now, Tyler has a tree stand, I have a tree stand, and we just kind of set up our stand. We get maybe 100 or 200 yards in. Like, we know the elk are probably going to be in the middle of the bush. That's kind of usually where they go. I don't know how they know the middle is the safest spot, but that's usually where they stick to. So we usually go 200 yards in, not quite to the middle, and then we set up our stands as quiet as you can. And then
what kind of stand are you using?
So my stand's a little unique. It's have you ever seen that? You've seen the tree steps, right? That guys screw into the trees.
Yes.
And they kind of like 90 degrees.
Yep.
So what I like to do, I figured this out last year, actually. I put in 5 steps, and it has to be on a tree that's leaning. Has to have a slight lean to it.
Okay.
So I carry it on my back. It's like ultra lightweight. And I screw in 5 steps. And then I've modified 2 tree steps that actually have pads on them to stand on.
Like, really?
Like, kind of the size of your hand on each tree step.
Yeah.
And so I screw in 5, and then I screw in 2 steps side by side on the tree, just kind of like a stand.
Yeah.
And then I, so the tree's leaning, right? So you can lean back against the tree when the tree's leaning. So it's not so bad standing on the steps. So I climb up, put my feet on those, and then I spin around, and then I put my feet on the pegs, those flat little pegs, and just lean against the tree.
Wow. That's really cool. It's a DIY, figuring it out. That's cool.
Yeah. Tyler just has a normal tree stand and tree step sort of thing. So his takes a little longer, but it still works pretty good. But so that's what I do. You got to find a leaning tree though. Sometimes it's tough to find those perfect leaners, but.
That's interesting. Cause most people are trying to find a straight up and down tree, and you're looking for the one that's leaning over. So that kind of gives you a unique advantage, I would think.
Yeah. It's a little different. And my stand set up this way with just the pegs, it's so quick. Like, I can have my stand up in 4 minutes usually. And,
oh, wow.
And that's usually, it's long enough, but it's not too long to spook the elk if they're close by. So the first setup, we do that, sit there in maybe 10, 20 minutes, just kind of cow call, no bull calls. I'm a fan of just cow calling. So I just,
and this is early season, right? Too kind of for you guys.
Yeah. Super early season. Yeah. So there's no bulls screaming like anywhere on the farmland or anywhere around us. There's the odd scream, but they're not full.
Yeah.
Not horned up yet, sort of thing.
Right.
So.
Right.
So we call for 20 minutes, nothing. And then, once you get down from the first steps, like, okay, here we go. We're going to the middle now. So, what we like to do is, like, you have to have that mindset that it can take you all day, even though it's only 400 yards. You got to walk to your next setup. You got to think, this can take me all day to walk that 400 yards as quiet as we can, because we know those elk are right there. Mm-hmm. Or there's a good chance.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if it takes us 2 hours to walk 400 yards, we're gonna take that risk.
Yeah, that's a really awesome nugget for a new hunter, by the way, because I think we try and put hunting on our own time limits, and we end up rushing and bumping. So you having that mentality of going in slow and as long as it takes us, because you might think I can get from this point to that point, but what if the leaves are crunchy and it's a quiet, still day? Yeah, that's solid.
You kind of, like, our theory is you don't even want to hear yourself walk, basically. Yeah. And that's kind of our mindset too. Like, if you snap one branch, you're kind of looking at the other guy like, what the heck are you doing?
Man, Tanner, I've been watching video playback of me in Montana with my buddy Matt. And we're at one point, he and I were talking about different things that you pick up on each other. And he kindly mentioned that I need to spread my legs a little bit more whenever I walk, because he's like, your pants kind of rubbed a little together. And I'm watching video of this, and it's just like, I'm like, he was generous with that comment. I'm like, man, I've been hunting for how long? Like, these pants are rubbing. And it's just little things like that that you pick up on. You're like,
the little details. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes they make a big difference. Sometimes you can run right towards the elk and they'll come in. So but most of the time, I think sounds a big thing. So, we like to wear, like, cloth pants and stuff. So it makes sure it's a little quieter when your legs are swishing together, sort of thing. Yeah. Or like pajama pant material, sort of thing.
Pajama pants. I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to our second setup and we're getting excited. The sign's good. The wind's good, like I said, and it's just dead calm. And we're going a little far. And like with my tree leaner setup, it's like, we're getting close to the middle and we're getting a little stressed out, because it's like, I need a leaner. And like, my brother knows that too, Tyler. He's like, got to find a leaner. It's like, that's a disadvantage of my stand a little bit. But so we're looking for a leaning tree, and it's like, okay, there's some way up there, but that's borderline. Like, that's pretty close to them probably if they're in here, because that's kind of their bedding area. It's like, okay, we got to keep pushing. So we keep going, and then we hear something crash off very slightly. Not like we spooked them heavy, but like something kind of walked off. I mean, he was a heavy animal, so like, they're in here. Like, they're in here this morning. We're almost screwing them up, because one just ran off, and it's just like, oh, what do we do? It's like, I don't have a stand. And like, Tyler could have a stand in 2 seconds. And like, I don't have a stand. There's no trees for me. We're kind of in an open kind of caribou mossy area. It's pretty quiet. Mm. And, but we're looking ahead. It's like, we don't want to spook him anymore. We're like, I see one tree up there. I was like, we got to get to it. So we took our time, and maybe like 10, 20 minutes of silent walking. Like, we're close. We know we're like right on the edge of these elk. Like, they're maybe 70 yards away or less, like through the bush at us. So we're walking to this tree. Nothing else is crashing off. And I get to the base of my leaning tree. It's like, perfect. It's like, okay, this is good. And then I show Tyler, like, there's a tree for him right there. Like, we're set up side by side kind of thing. And as I get to my tree, I look over and there's a bull. He's playing with the brush in front of us with his antlers.
Oh, man.
And just kind of moving the brush. You couldn't really tell how big he was. I don't know if he was the herd bull that day or something, but he was playing with the brush and kind of walking around. You could hear him crunching. It's like, okay, we're too close now. Like, we're way too close. And I'm setting up my stand. I can look over my shoulder, and this bull, he's still playing with the, you can still see his antlers moving, playing with the brush. And I'm setting up my stand as quiet as possible. And so it's nerve wracking. It's like, they could crash off any second here.
Yeah.
But like us with longbows, like, you have to get up a tree. Like, we've tried it on the ground before, and it's like, with those big long limbs that we have, it's just, elk comes in, you're trying to move and all the brush, and they see you, they're gone, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Like, the elk out here are pretty, they're pretty wise. They hear something, smell something, they're just gone instantly.
Yeah.
So we're getting up these trees. We get it set up, and we just let it settle for about 5 minutes. Just no sounds, no squeaks. I don't want to call right away, because we made a little bit of snaps, a little bit of tings with our tree pegs and stuff, but not too much to throw them off. So we're up in the trees. The bull kind of moved off. I didn't see him anymore. Then I started letting out some cow calls, just subtle cow calls, maybe one every one every 5 minutes sort of thing. Just to act like a real elk, like we're just kind of calling to the herd sort of thing. Mm-hmm. We don't want to rustle them up. And then I see these two shadows coming through the trees, just 60 yards away. They're kind of circling us downwind. And I like to put Tyler downwind of the collar usually, or I guess on the downwind side, just ahead of the downwind side. Cause elk, sometimes they like to circle downwind of you mm-hmm. when you're calling. So he's in the downwind side of me. These elk are circling. I was like, oh, freaking right. It's like, they're coming right to your tree. Like we got them. We're fooling them, but they're circling. They kind of disappear into the bush. I was like, come on, like what? They should be coming in, you know? And then, they peel out. I don't know if it was the one that we jumped was a little bit wise of us maybe, but they kind of disappear. No sound. It was like no sound for 20 minutes. It was just like, what are these elk doing? Like, did we spook them too much? And then I was just kept calling once every 5 minutes sort of thing. And I was almost ready to get down. Tyler wasn't. He was jacked up still. He was just like, we're sitting here all day if we have to sort of thing. So, but I was almost ready to go down. And like I said, there was no sound. It didn't look good. And thought we spooked him. So then I decided to let out a little bull call. I like to do it at the end of my call, usually just a half squeak, like kind of like I'm the littlest bull in the herd sort of thing. And let out this little squeak and a few cow calls and just like nothing again for about 2-3 minutes. And then all of a sudden one crack to the left of me. And I just got me pretty excited, and then crack, crack. And it just, something started cracking real heavy towards the left. I was like, holy smokes. I think something's coming in this time. I'm looking at Tyler, looking back at the cracks, and the cracks keep getting louder, and you can hear a mewing coming in. This bull is just letting out little mews every couple of steps. Mew, mew. And I could hear him coming. I was like, oh, I wonder if it's a cow. I wonder if it's a bull. Looking through the trees, and I can see his rack kind of wiggling through the trees towards us. And I was just like, holy, here we go. I'm probably going to release an arrow here. So getting ready, and I'm looking at Tyler, telling him that's its bull, and he's getting ready and stuff. And this bull is just coming in on a string, just straight for us. I couldn't even, it just happened so quick. So he's walking in, and I have the video on our Titan page, and he's walking in, and he kind of goes to the left of my stand, which is actually behind my tree. So, and I'm facing kind of straight. So as he comes in, I have to lean around the back side of the tree to get a shot at this guy. And he's just keeps coming. He doesn't even want to stop. Mm. So I don't know the best way to stop him without spooking him, but he comes into my shooting lane, and I'm leaning on my wreath in my mouth, just, and I don't stop squeaking. This elk just doesn't stop for me. He just keeps on.
No breaks.
Yeah. And I'm just leaning on this call and, just making the most ridiculous elk sound possible, and this elk still doesn't stop. He kind of looks over as he's walking, but he just keeps on stepping. It's like, hey, I gotta shoot while he's moving. Like, this is my shooting lane's closing pretty quick here. And what my brother always says is, when the elk's coming in, you know it's a shooter, you just, first thing you do is you look for a spot. Mm-hmm. You look for a spot on that animal to shoot. So I see he's a bull, and I'm just focused on his ribs the whole time. So my eyesight is just pegged, like I'm shooting that elk right there. And yeah. I just glued to that spot. He walks under me and released. It didn't seem pretty quick, but it was a pretty high shot. Hit him, but I missed the spine, and it went sunk straight in pretty deep, about a foot and a half penetration right into the tops of the lung. And he didn't go far. It crashed off 6 yards. We could hear him huffing and puffing, and usually you don't hear that, but he was groaning.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, it was unreal. Yeah.
That's incredible, man. Yeah. I did watch the video right before we got on here, and it is fantastic. And yeah. Your reaction, the excitement. Now, is this your first bull or first elk or first one with recurve?
Or
longbow, that is.
Longbow, yeah. First one with the longbow, but I did get one with the compound.
Oh, okay.
When I was 12 or 13, somewhere in there, I got one.
Oh, cool. Okay. Yeah. So, wow.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, a major accomplishment with a longbow for sure.
Yeah. It's definitely rewarding when you've been waiting so many years, and I've been trying for so long with I used to use the recurve and I switched to longbow and not having too much success. And then finally closing the deal on this elk is just this unreal feeling, you know, I guess.
Yeah.
For him to go down so quick and everything worked out, I guess.
Yeah, that's just cool. And I just think it's neat, your composure holding it together, trying to wait for that shot. There's one point where it looks like you're almost about to draw, and then you let down just a little bit, yeah. To kind of like, wait, no, make sure it's the right moment, making sure that you take a good shot. And that's the
right spot, yeah.
Yeah, that's perfect.
So when I drew back there in that video there, I was actually just pumping my arms up, getting ready.
Oh, really? Okay.
Like kind of just like practice drawing, like, okay, Dave, I can just kind of, this is what it's going to be like, you know,
yeah,
sort of thing. But
visualizing that moment tonight before I came over to my office, I stepped out my backyard and I look, and it's a nice cold front. I look and there's a doe standing in my backyard, like, and she's just facing me. And this might sound silly, but I just, like, tomorrow is my first whitetail hunt this year. So she's facing me and I'm just standing there by my car, and she's just kind of giving me that look. I drew back on her with my imaginary bow in my hand. And I was like, okay, let's visualize this moment. Like, let's just say it's a buck tomorrow night. And it's like this, it's facing me, it's on the hill in front of me. So I sit there just trying to remember all the things that I want to remember in that moment, keeping my back tension, making sure I got my finger in the right spot since I'm shooting a compound. And I was like, at one point I was like, wait a second, you got the wrong eye closed here. I would like to think with my bow in my hand, I wouldn't make that, but I was like,
yeah,
all those things that you've got to process in a moment. I want to get better at that. And I think even just visualizing that moment, and I was waiting, I was like, she's going to turn sideways in a second. Sure enough, I waited. It was like 30 seconds. I'm just standing there and she just slowly turned. I was like, right there's where I would take the shot. Like right there's the spot I'm waiting for, and visualizing.
Time to release. Yeah. So I think it's very important to kind of practice that. And like, even like get in your tree stand or in your blind or whatever, and draw your bow 3 times before the hunt and kind of visualize what you're going to do or remember your anchor points and all that stuff. It's hard to think about. It's extremely tough to think about when the moment actually comes down to it. You forget it all in 2 seconds, but it helps, I think, a little bit to of course reenact it, I guess.
Yeah, 100%. One thing that happened for me this year with Montana was they have a percentage let off on your compound. And at first I really didn't like that, because I mean, obviously I've got to hold it back. It's still 80%, but you know, I was used to basically I'd come over the top, I could probably hold it for like 2 or 3 minutes, no problem.
Oh,
now I got to use back tension. But what I like about that is it used to be if I wanted to let down, it was hard. Like the whole letting it get back over that edge, half the time my arrow would pop off of my string. And so I've already decided I'm keeping my bow right where it's at, because I can now, it's a lot easier for me to do what you just said, get in the stand. I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't practice drawing back because I was afraid that my arrow would pop off or I'd make too much noise letting it down. Now, so yeah, just things to think about as you're running through your hunts and getting those reps in. I think that's
kind of huge. Tweaking it to perfect sort of thing. Yeah. I see what you say when there's a light let off and it just kind of snaps back, you know?
Yeah.
That's not ideal when there's a deer standing there and he's.
Oh no! No, last year I accidentally punched the trigger on a letdown and fired my arrow, and then I didn't know there was a deer standing there. He was just a small buck, but all of a sudden a deer runs off, and I was like, "So yeah, lesson learned."
Yeah.
So you mentioned Titan Ventures. Tell us a little bit about that, because that's where I saw this video. What's Titan Ventures, and how did you guys come up with that?
Well, I used to create videos when I was younger, kind of. Posting them on YouTube, little clips, little teaser clips, I guess, with a bunch of music. And they weren't that good back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
But that's kind of, I just enjoy it a lot, making videos and filming hunts. It's awesome to like relive your hunts, I guess, over and over. When you get older, it's going to be fun to watch your hunts over and over again, you know? So that's kind of why I love doing it. And kind of why we make videos is just something they did and people enjoyed them, and we kind of just took it from there, sort of thing. And our channel's there for people who can't get out as much as we can, and so they can enjoy our hunts, and hopefully we can teach our viewers something too. I mean, same as you. Yeah
100%. And I mean, it looks like you guys got a good following and putting out a lot of, and it's not like you have just one thing, you have a lot of different things on your channel. Now, real quick, so if guys are curious and they're listening to this mid podcast, want to check it out, Titan Ventures, right?
Yep, that's it.
Okay, you guys YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram, correct?
Yeah, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram. Yeah, and we used to do spear fishing when we first started. That was our main, I guess, content for our channel was spear fishing. And then we got into, I guess, we were always into hunting, but we were just like, man, we should really start videoing our hunts and everything and our fishing trips, you know, like we do with the rod and reel, not just spear fishing, and kind of mix in the whole smorgasbord of stuff.
Yeah. Well, talk to me about the spear fishing, because I think I've had one guest on in 168 episodes very early on that did some spear fishing. So tell me a little bit about how you got into, I'm just curious about how that works. I don't know if there's any stories that might go with that, or like I saw something about a world record. So tell us a little bit about your spear fishing side of things.
Yeah. So our uncle back in the day when we were little, he used to do a whole bunch of spear fishing, and he kind of started it for our family sort of thing. And our cousin spearfish now, and Tyler spearfishes. We're very lucky to have four guys that love spearfishing that we go with regularly now. So, but yeah, our uncle started a long time ago. He used to go in the lakes kind of in southern Saskatchewan. They're a little dirtier, lots of weeds in those lakes. So it's a little scary. But when I was younger, I went with my dad because he decided to give it a shot with my uncle, and we swam into this little coulee, we call it, full of water. And there was just tall weeds everywhere, just scraping your chest as you're swimming through the reeds. And I had nothing to do with that when I was younger, and I absolutely hated it. And it was pretty scary for me. And he always showing these pictures of shooting these big northern pike and stuff. And so I kind of got out of it there for a couple of years, but then once I got a little older, a little braver, I decided, you know what, I'll give her another shot, one more shot. And we swam in a lake kind of north of us here in the Shield, and the lakes are a little more clear. You can see about 10, 15 feet, not too many weeds scraping off your chest sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then that kind of got me hooked. I seen a bunch of northern pike, and they were just kind of everywhere. I had my own homemade spear with a fishing rod on there and a book and an arrow for a shaft kind of thing.
Nice.
So it was kind of makeshift, but that's kind of how I started. And then after that day, I was just, we were absolutely hooked on the sport.
Yeah. It's just is neat to me, this concept of going under the water. Now you guys are you kind of like free dive? Do you have like a snorkel? I mean, from an elementary kind of level, explain how you do this a little bit. And then I do want to hear about like this world record thing, because that intrigues me as well.
Yeah. So some guys, they use scuba tanks. Like scuba tanks is legal in Saskatchewan for spear fishing. Mm-hmm. We don't use tanks just because sometimes it can scare the fish, and we're kind of scared of malfunctions and stuff like that, you know? So mm-hmm. we just do free dives. So you're the only thing that can hurt you, I guess, is your own mental capacity sort of thing. So,
okay.
So we do a bunch of free diving. We practice holding our breath at home and stuff. And like once we were into it, we were holding our breath every day and practicing in the pool and going to the big city in the big pools. And we kind of look like dorks because we're holding their breath and everyone's swimming on the top and going off the diving boards. And here we are sitting at the bottom of the pool holding their breath. So,
wow. Just out of curiosity, how long can you like safely hold your breath?
Safely? Our average breath holding the lake's about a minute and a half to 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And that's like swimming around and stuff. In the house here, just practice breathing, my best is 4 minutes, 57 seconds.
Oh, wow.
But yeah. That's, you turn purple by the end of that session there.
Yeah. And you're at your house and people can kick you and help you. So,
yeah, you got to have another person watching you, but
okay.
That's definitely a lot of learning, and it's kind of tough to get into because it's kind of scary down there, but once you get used to it, it's pretty fun.
Yeah. Now, have you guys gotten world record fish or? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, we got a few. I have the world record for northern pike. It's 21.7 pounds. And wow. we got that in a lake just close to us. The previous record was, I think, 20 pounds and some. So I just snuck them out. And Tyler got the world record for a sucker. It's called a white sucker. I'm not sure if you heard of them before, but
yeah,
kind of just like a bottom feeder fish. But it was about 6 pounds, that sucker there that he got. And then my dad got our last previous one, I guess, or most recent one, and his was a tiger trout, which was kind of cool. Yeah,
that's cool, man. Good for you guys. That just sounds like a fun thing. I mean,
yeah,
I love fishing. Like I learned to love it, But one of the most fun things I've ever done is bowfish, because I'm like, we're out here force feeding them. You know, like if they don't bite, that's all right. I'll make them bite, you know, kind of thing. And that's just, that's that concept. So that's pretty
That's
cool.
kind of our, if they're not biting, it don't matter because you can just find them. Yeah. It's up to your skill level, I guess, if you're going to have fish for supper or not.
Yeah. That's neat. Real cool. Something different. I don't know what's about, but it's just intriguing. So kind of jumping back into like maybe the hunting side of things. You guys have mule deer? Do you any mule deer hunts up there?
Yeah, there's little pockets of mule deer here. Not too many, too much where we're from, but there is just an archery season for mule deer. Mm-hmm. And there's actually quite a few big bucks around us. Some nice ones, but it's tough to get close because there's only a couple in our whole area, but there's lots of does, lots of fawns sort of things. So we do a little bit of hunting with those too. Actually, my first animal with the longbow was a mule deer.
Just
the fawn last year. Yeah. So that hunt there, first tag I've ever bought, and I shot the recurve before the longbow, and I wasn't shooting too well with the recurve. I could admit that the arrows weren't hitting their spots on the bale and stuff like that. But it was a $200 bow from Cabela's, and I don't know if I can blame it on that, but that's what I blame it on to this day. But
yes,
I had that recurve and I was just frustrated. I couldn't shoot it. And my dad just bought a new longbow, a really nice one, like a $1,200 bow. And he had an old bow that he used when he was younger and for his whole life, basically, and said, you know what, you can have this bow. And that's the bow I shot the elk with, was his bow there. So
that's cool.
It was handmade for him. And that bow that I shot Malk with is about $1,000 bow. And that was back in the day, it was $1,000. So I think it's a pretty decent bow.
Yeah.
But so I was shooting my recurve, couldn't shoot anything with it. Like it was just shooting all over the place. And I picked up dad's longbow. I said, you know what, I'll give it, maybe I will switch to longbow or I'll give it a try. And I shot three arrows out of the bow right at the target. I was at dad's. And I was just like, what am I doing shooting this recurve? My arrows went right in the bullseye every time.
Now, are like you shooting instinctive or a point of the arrow? What are you doing for that?
Mainly instinctive, just kind of, once you shoot enough, you kind of can see the angle of the arrow in your peripheral vision. You can kind of know a lot. Some guys use the point to aim, but I find it better just to kind of look where you want the arrow to go and just kind of have the arrow in your peripheral vision, and usually goes where you want it to, but it's it's tough sometimes. But yeah, I shot three perfect arrows out of his bow, and I basically threw that recurve in the garbage after that. So
so
I had his bow there, and I picked it up that day, and I bought my mule deer tag maybe the day before or 2 days before. So you know what, I'm gonna go out for a little mule deer hunt. So it was about 40 kilometer winds. It was the windiest day of the fall that we had. I said, you know what, if I'm going to stalk a mule deer, today's the day that I'm going to get close. So I was driving around the back road sort of thing and looking for mule deer, because they're only 10, 15 minutes away from where we live. So driving around, I spot this doe out in the field, and she's got her head in the wind and her ears are flopping around because it's so windy and she doesn't really know. I mean, I was like, well, I got her. She's just standing there. I got the perfect wind. She's right along the tree row. I can sneak along the tree row to her. So I park my truck in this abandoned yard, and I'm sneaking through this yard at this mule deer. And I sneak to the edge of the yard, and I look out, and she's still at the tree row, but she's a little antsy. She's kind of stepping around and a little bit scared. And so I back off and kind of made a game plan that I'm going to come at her from a different angle through the other side of the tree row where she can't see me, and kind of belly crawl my way up to her, try to get within 10, 15 yards, because that's kind of the max range for a longbow. So I have that same mindset. It's like 2 o'clock in the day, and I just say, you got all day. It's like, she's not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. So I'm just, if this takes me 5 hours to get to her, it takes me 5 hours to get to her. So I start with my game plan here. I'm sneaking down the tree row. I'm getting a little closer. I'm probably 60, 50 yards from her. She's bedded down now, and I can see her moving around, looking around as if every time I peek up, I'm like, man, this is good. This is like looking so good. But what I forgot to think about is when there's one mule deer, most of the time there's a couple more laying around her.
Yep.
So I'm sneaking up on this muley, and I'm pretty quiet. I can't hear myself walk. I took my shoes off. I'm just walking to my, and so I'm sneaking through the bush, sneaking through the bush, and then it kind of opens up into a grassy area just before where the doe's bedded. And I'm just kind of hunched and walking slow, looking at the ground, making sure my feet aren't stepping on any branches. And I look up, and about 6 or 7 yards away, this one ear comes up and another ear comes up. And this fawn muley, probably the doe's fawn, is looking at me in the grass. And I don't have an arrow knocked on my bow. And the still laying there and looking at me. It's like, yeah, like I said, 6 or 7 yards. And I just freeze. And I slowly undo an arrow from my quiver and put it onto my bow. And at this time, the fawn stands up and is perfectly broadside at 6-7. I go, don't run. Don't run in my mind. And I got it knocked, got the arrow knocked, and the fawn still doesn't move. And I'm being as still as I can. And then I just kind of draw and stretch my arm out and put it right through the boiler room, right in the middle of this fawn. So, it's not much because it's a fawn, but it's still.
No, you stalked your way into 6 yards of a bedded group of mule deer. That's impressive. With a longbow.
Longbow, yeah. So that was pretty big. I was pretty happy about that. I got made fun of for shooting a fawn quite a bit, but it was.
I bet it tastes good.
Real good, yeah.
We have a lot of weird stigmas about shooting fawns or shooting does with fawns and all this stuff around that. And I get some of that, but at the same time, it's like, it's an animal and it's put here for us to enjoy. And honestly, the younger they are, the more tender they are. I mean, there's a reason that veal is a top, delicacy in most restaurants. So, I mean, there's something to that.
And none of it goes to waste, and it feeds our whole family, like the elk too. We have our whole family here, is about 5 of us, and we all hunt, and it feeds everybody sort of thing. So
yeah, that's cool to put that. I mean, that's awesome. I mean, so today it's coming for me, Tanner. Like, I had a recurve that I won, and then I shot it a lot during COVID. I even tried to turkey hunt with it, and then I got rid of it. I sold it because I wanted to upgrade my saddle gear. I didn't want the temptation of shooting it all the time, which is what I was doing. My wife was getting frustrated, and I regret that. I'm like, I really loved, like, I don't know that I love shooting my compound bow. If I miss by a little bit, I'm frustrated. With a recurve or a longbow, if I'm like 2 inches, I'm like, heck yeah, like, I'm in the ballpark, you know? And so today I was at the bow shop picking up some stuff, and they have like 5 or 6, trad bows over on the wall. And so I started going over and checking up. There's just something really awesome about going back to the basics, just a stick and a string and learning how to make that work. And I see myself at some point, maybe not yet, but maybe not yet. Yeah. But would love to go back to that, 'cause it's just pretty awesome.
That's the thing. It's like going back to what they used to use, like you said, stick and string, no sights, kind of shooting with your fingers sort of thing. And it's something about that just makes you feel like it just makes it that much better. I mean, shooting it with the compound or any weapon is a heck of an achievement too, but it makes it feel so much better when you get that close. I mean, another saying that I've heard from people is, it's not how far you can shoot, it's how close you can get to that animal, makes it a fun hunt sort of thing.
Oh, 100%. And that, I mean, to each their own. I've, been doing a lot of elk stuff, and I saw a guy the other day post about shooting an elk with his bow over 100-yard shot, And I mean, if you can take that and feel confident, it's just not for me. 'Cause I mean, if I could shoot that far, I just still don't know that I would, I learned that lesson a hard way a few years ago, thinking I could shoot further on whitetails. And it's not a matter of how far I can shoot. It's how far is that animal going to move in the time that I shoot.
Yeah, how ethical is it, kind of thing,
And each person has to figure that out.
Yeah, like longbow, I mean, it can be like not the ethicalest thing if you're shooting far, but if you're smart about it and shoot close and make sure he's broadside, kind of thing, then your success rate goes up quite a bit. Same with compound. If you're going to shoot that 100 yards, some animals are going to get away from you probably, but yeah, that's just hunting though,
It is. It is, man. So what do you got on the docket coming up? So you shot an elk in September. What's the fall looking like for you? What all hunting do you get into?
Actually, just was on a moose hunt. We backcountry camp just north of us here. And it was archery season, but the rut kind of is hitting right now. And we kind of went pre-rut.
Okay.
And we didn't have much luck, seeing a lot of signs, seen some tracks, found actually a nice moose antler on the ground. It was pretty cool, but heard a couple grunts of moose, but didn't have too much success. But yeah, in our agenda now, it's I'm going to go on another moose camp hunt here in the rut with the longbow again in a couple weeks here, a week and a half here, once the season opens up again, and kind of go for that. Tyler wants to, he's itching to go for elk in the morning. So I think we're going to go try the same, exact same bush I got mine in the morning.
Man, I look forward to that video. That should be good. And he's like, I don't care how the tree leans, I'm picking the tree this time is what he's going
to
say.
Yeah. He gets in the tree. I get to stay on the ground this time, be the caller. Yeah.
That's cool. So this, yeah. We didn't really talk much about that. This is your brother. So you spend a lot of time, it sounds like, hunting with your brother. So you guys are, my brother and I, we used to fight like cats and dogs, but I found now that we're grown, we enjoy a good hunt every so often. So it sounds like you guys have kind of a close relationship when it comes to hunting.
Yeah, I'm pretty lucky to have a brother that we don't fight or we're not, you know, separated sort of thing like that. So it's, we love hunting together, and it's nice to have someone to go with lots of the time. And and especially when he also hunts with the longbow and he's taken whitetails and bears, and he's actually taken more animals than I have with the longbow. But it's nice to have two of the same weapon going out, and then you kind of know what to expect and kind of know how to set up, and you're setting up for longbows, you're not setting up for compound sort of thing.
Yeah. It sounds like when you talked about the way that you guys move through the woods, you have the same mentality. So you guys have talked about how you're going to do this, and you have the same, he's not trying to bull rush and be fast. He's taking his time like you are. And that's important in a hunting partner to have somebody that you're on the same page with.
Yeah. We both know the strategy, and if we're a little bit off our strategy, he's more than happy to give me heck, and I'm more than happy to give him heck sort of thing. Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, Tanner, yeah. I've enjoyed the conversation, man. It's been awesome learning a little bit about Saskatchewan hunting and some of your experiences, and we'd love to have you back on sometime to hear some more if that's all right.
Yeah, that's for sure. If I end up getting a moose, or Tyler, I'm sure he'd be happy to come on, or me, if we shoot some more animals in the future.
Yeah, man. Well, I want to encourage guys, go over and check out that video, definitely, of the elk, of your most recent elk over at Titan Ventures, and that's TYTAN, I think, of Tyler Tanner Ventures, and that's on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. Tanner, I've enjoyed it, man. Thanks for coming on tonight. Appreciate it.
Yeah, not a problem. Thanks for having me, Travis.
All right, good luck this season.
Yeah, you too. See you.
See ya. Man, that was really cool. Loved hearing those stories. The way he told them is just neat. I just love experiences like that. It's part of the reason I'm drawn to go elk hunt in Montana or do these crazy things. It's just to go someplace I've never been, or talk to people in a place I've never been, and just hear what their hunting experiences are, and just that same level of excitement that he has, I have, and it's just really cool. Really enjoyed talking to Tanner. You know, something that he talked about that I kind of picked up on is just, and it didn't really occur to me till the end to ask him about this, but this relationship that he has with his brother, going out there and just experiencing that with him, you know, that's something that I love. I love this time of year, because anytime I get a phone call from my brother Jacob, or my friend Travis Shire, my friend Eric Penrod, or anybody that I'm friends with that hunts, there's like this little bit of excitement, like when they call, like, are they calling to tell me that they got something? I got a picture from Eric the other day, and Eric had shot with a longbow a super nice buck, you know, on his dad's property. And Eric's had kind of a tough year with different things going on, and I was just pumped for him. It's just like, what I love about hunting and this kind of thing is it's not just friendships, it's a brotherhood. It kind of connects you with people on a deeper level, this passion that we have for being in the woods. And every so often, I'm able to go out with somebody into the woods and experience that, and that's even cooler. And so I think it's neat what Tanner's doing. And it just, all this kind of reminds me of a verse, maybe you've heard of this, it's Proverbs 18:24. It says, "One who has unreliable friends soon comes to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother." Man, that's so true. I think each of us might be able to think of somebody. Now, don't name them or text them or anything like that, but do you have any unreliable friends? People that you can't count on for anything? They just, you know, you've got to call them. They don't call you hardly at all. You know, we've all have some of those relationships, and that's just part of life. You know, that's part of life. But a person says, "One who has unreliable friends soon comes to ruin." If that's all you have, then you're going to struggle. You got to have these people that you can go on adventures with, these people that you can call and share not only hunting, but just life with. There is one friend, there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. You know, and I think those people are, this points me in a couple different directions. One, it's good for us to find those kind of people that will be that to us, but then it makes me think, am I that kind of friend to somebody else? That I'm such a good friend that I'm closer than like an actual physical brother to them. You know, I'm sometimes wrapped up in my own stuff with my own family, my own things going on, that I don't, maybe I'm not always the best friend in the world that I should be. And I think about, you know, the people that maybe they're going through hard times. Do you call them? Do you try and get with them? Do you try and take them out on a hunt? Do you try and join them? I need to be a better friend than what I am. I think sometimes I do okay and I think about it, but sometimes, like I said, just become selfish. So I'm just asking you right now to think about that. Those people that you consider your brothers or sisters, either way, are you being that type of friend to them? Can you do something this week to just let them know that you're thinking about them? You know, nothing crazy out of the ordinary, maybe, but just a text or some sort of, let's go grab a coffee, or man, hey, why don't we plan a hunt together? We haven't hunted in ages. Let's do this thing. Let's plan it out here and let's go. I don't know what it is for you, but I just want to throw that out there for you to think about, because it's such an important thing. You never know. You just never know where somebody's at. Sometimes they need that encouragement in their life. They need somebody. They need to know that somebody is there for them like that. I have those people, and I'm fortunate to have that. I want to make sure that I'm that for other people. I think I've beat that horse enough, so I'm going to let that one go and just say, guys, thank you so much for coming back for another episode, for listening. Man, it's hunting season. You should have some hunting stories, and there's this thing called email or social media. SheddingLightOD@gmail.com. Send me a message if you'd like to come on, share some of your stories, or go over to Facebook, Instagram, send us a private message over there at Shedding Light Outdoors. Once again, check out YouTube. Make sure you hit subscribe on Shedding Light Outdoors, because I'll be dropping that video soon, and I'm hoping before too long we have some videos to share. I won't be too long now. Guys, thank you so much for listening. Hope that you come back next time for another great interview, another great guest. And until then, remember to shed the light.